Thank you so much for joining us today. You're listening to Corrieton Cast, the official podcast of Corrieton Church. In today's message, Dr. Rocky Ramsey teaches on how to parent biblically. We've been in a series on relationships and a mini-series on parenting. In this message, Pastor Rocky explains modeling, instructing, providing, protecting, respect, training, and discipline for our children.
Some of you may know that before I felt called into ministry, I was a basketball player, played at Central High School, went to a small college in Kentucky to play basketball. Now it's called the University of the Cumberlands. It was Cumberland College at that time. For the past 3 years, I had kind of eaten, slept, and drank basketball. I got up there, I was kind of burned out a little bit, felt called to be a pastor. But having played all that basketball, when I got on the court, everything I did was instinctive. I never had to think about where to look, where to be, how to shoot, any of those things, because I'd just done it so much. So even though I quit ball in school there and returned to UT, I continued to play competitively, recreationally. At one point, me and some guys in our church had probably the second best team in Knoxville. Around that time, I coached a young girls team and my daughter Emily played. And it was really frustrating for me because I instinctively knew everything they should do. I didn't have to think a second about where they should be or what they should be doing. And here were these young girls who had no clue where they should be or what they should be doing. And so I'm over there trying to yell and coach and tell them what to do, where to get and all that. It dawned on me that when kids are starting out, you have to teach them every single thing. What's a box out? What's a pivot? What's a walk? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera in basketball. Raising children requires that same kind of attention to detail because you have to teach them every single thing. What to touch, what not to touch. What to put in your mouth, not what not to put in your mouth. Where your hands go and where your hands shouldn't go. What they are to say and what they are not to say. Where they are to be and where they are not to be. How to behave, how not to behave. Raising children, especially if you're doing it right, is some of the hardest work in the world. So if you have a child, think, oh, this is going to be easy. And here's the deal. The older they get, the harder it gets. Some of you got babies. You got this baby keep you up. And I say, oh, this is really hard. Brace yourself. It's going to get a lot harder than that. What's a parent to do? So this morning I will speak on biblical preaching. This is the fourth of six messages I'm doing on parenting in a larger relationship on parents, on relationships. Follow along in your outlines. I'll read Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 5 to 7. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. These words which I'm commanding you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your sons and shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise up. The point of these verses is not to have a daily devotional with your children. The point of these verses is everywhere, all the time, you're teaching. Everywhere, all the time, you're teaching. When they're sitting, when they're walking, when they're laying down, when they're getting up. So I'm going to give you seven responsibilities of biblical parenting, and I've reduced each main point into one word. The first word is model. Model. Do what you want them to do. So what is that? Well, spiritually, you should, number one, love God well. Verse 5 says, you shall love the Lord your God. They should know how to love God because they've seen you do it. They should grow up knowing exactly what that looks like because they've seen you doing it. Number two, live in His Word. Live in His Word. Verse 6 says, these words shall be on your heart. To teach them what God wants them to do, you have to know what God wants them to do, which means you have to live in His Word so you know you're getting those things right. And then as you live in the Word, they will see you do that, And it'll model for them the fact they need to be in the Word. Now, years ago when the kids were small, every night I would lay in bed, put my Bible on my chest, and read it. That just kind of was the last thing. And so one of my most, I thought about getting up here and putting it up, I should have. But one of my favorite pictures from our kids' childhood is Emily is about maybe 16 months old. And back then when we'd do these baby dedications, we'd give them a little Gideon Bible. Hers, the girls got pink. I guess the boys got blue. I don't remember. But the girls got pink. And so we've got a picture. I'm laying in the bed with my Bible on my chest reading it. Emily's laying right beside me with her Gideon Bible upside down pretending to read it. Just a precious picture. She was getting the idea. This is an important thing. This happens all the time. This is what Dad does. So live in His Word. Number three, live out His Word. Live out His Word. If you don't live what you say, we'd call it practice what you preach, your kids are likely to eventually reject what you've said. If you don't do what you say, your kids are likely to eventually reject what you said. You understand that? Do as I say and not as I do is a disastrous parenting plan. It will not go well. If you'll be like Jesus and they'll be like you, then they'll be like Jesus. This is what Paul was talking about in 1 Corinthians 11:1 there in your outline. It says, be imitators of me just as I also am of Christ. What he was saying is, I'm becoming like Christ. If you'll become like me, you'll be becoming more like Christ, because that's what I'm doing. The Greek word translated imitators here is the word from which we get our word mimic. Mimic, copy. So model the behavior you want your children to adopt and mimic. Number two, second word is instruct. Instruct. It's not just enough to model how they should live. You have to teach them how they should live. And so I've got several categories. Physically, teach them to take care of themselves. Teach them to take care of themselves. This includes learning to rest, learning to exercise, having a decent diet. How a person takes care of him or herself physically has huge implications to their future. I don't want to say a whole lot more about that, but do you understand that? How they take care of themselves physically has huge implications in their future. When they go want to date, want to marry, want to get a job, et cetera, et cetera. Don't underestimate that. Number two, relationally, teach them how to relate to others. Teach them how to relate to others. Teach them things like boundaries, respect, kindness, gratitude, thoughtfulness. Some people, listen, have the determination to achieve, but they never learn how to play well with others. If it's just them and the assignment just requires them, they'll knock it out of the park. But if they have to work with other people, it's going to be a problem. Probably every one of you knows somebody, at least, who doesn't know how to play well with others. And it sabotages their life over and over. Friendships, maybe marriage, other relationships, work relationships. So you got to teach them how to get along with people, how to relate people, how to play well with people. Then number three is mentally. You got to teach them how to think. Teach them how to think. Now, don't miss this. Say it twice. Early on, you teach them what to think. But as they hit middle and high school, you teach them how to think. Early on, you teach them what to think. Why don't you bother teach them how to think then? Because they're not going to get it. They're too young. They start reaching middle and high school, you quit telling them what to think. You tell them how to think. So this is what we believe. This is why we believe it. This is what we do. This is why we do it. This is what we don't do, and here's why we don't do it. It's no longer enough to just say this, that, and you're going to do it. You're in trouble. You got to teach them how to think, because there's going to come a day when you're not going to be there and they're going to have to figure out what to do with some situation. And if you've just taught them what to think and this isn't falling in one of those categories, they won't know what to do. So you'll teach them how to think. I'm about to do this Tuesday. I'm doing a staff retreat, First Baptist Church of the North City, and I'm going to blow their minds. I'm going to spend an hour blowing their minds. teaching them what to think and how to interpret the Bible. And I'm pretty sure none of them have ever said anything like what I'm about to be to them. I don't want to tell you what to think. I want to teach you how to think. I don't want you to believe anything because I said it. I want you to believe it because it's been true to Scripture. You've checked it out and God said it. So you got to teach them how to think. Number four, emotionally, you got to teach them how to be happy. Teach them how to be happy. That's a skill. If happiness is simply a result, the result of being in pleasant stimuli, we're not going to be happy a lot. So we've got to learn to be happy when we have reasons not to be happy. If you try to always make them happy, which means you let them have their way, give them everything they want, you become the reason later in life they'll never be happy. Why? Because nobody else is ever going to do that. Not even their spouse. So you set them up for an expectation that nobody else is going to play by that set of rules. And they're going to be frustrated and miserable. They've never not gotten their way. That's part of what's wrong with marriage. You get this kid, this boy, he's always gotten whatever he wanted. And he marries this girl who's always gotten whatever she wanted. They are both going to get everything they want in a marriage. They're in trouble. The world's revolved, this family's world revolved around him. This family's world revolved around her. Who's it going to revolve around now? I'm telling you, they're in trouble. Right from the get-go, they're in trouble. They haven't learned to play well with others. They haven't learned how not to get their way and be okay about it. Life is often difficult and unfair. If you have to have things your way, you're going to be unhappy a lot. A lot. Am I in the right room? They just don't go your way, way often, maybe sometimes more often than not. You got to teach them how to cope. You got to teach them how not to quit when life is not like they wished it would be, which again is a lot. Spiritually, you got to teach them how to walk with God. It's what they were made for. They should know how to walk with the Lord because they've seen you do it. They've seen you do it. And you've told them how to do it. Timothy learned how to love the Lord and to follow Jesus from watching his mother and grandmother. So we're told in 2 Timothy 1:5, Paul says, I'm mindful of the sincere faith within you, which first dwelt in your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice. Timothy knew exactly what it meant to love the Lord and live for the Lord. He'd watched his grandmom and his mom do it. Your model, instruct. Then you have to provide. Provide. Now, what is it you have to provide? I've just got a few things. Number one is a safe, loving home. A safe, loving home. Your child doesn't need to see or experience abuse, which means that some people have to rescue their children the best they can from that child's mother or father. They should never be exposed to all that. They need to be loved. They need to see their mom and dad love each other. Number two is shelter. You provide shelter. Listen to 1 Timothy 5:8. If anyone does not provide for his own, especially for those of his own household, he's denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. That's a pretty incredible statement, isn't it? A third thing, this is kind of a gimme, but it's true, is food. You got to give them food. They'll starve to death if you don't. Let me give you some great advice. Don't have children till you can conceivably afford them. Don't have them till you conceivably afford them. I'm going to come back to that later. Jot down, listen to Proverbs 24, 27. Proverbs 24, 27. Prepare your work outside and make it ready for yourself in the fields. Afterwards, then build your house. Now, here's my paraphrase of that verse. Get your financial act together before you marry and have kids. Get your financial act together before you marry and have kids. And of course, number four, you want to give them Jesus. Psalm 100, verse 3 says, Note, the Lord himself is God. It's he who has made us, not we ourselves. We are his people and the sheep of his pasture. Your children came from him, not you. Jeremiah 1:5 says they were with him before they were conceived by you and your spouse. They were made by him, not you. They were made for him, not you. Colossians 1, I believe it's 19. And the ultimate judge of their lives will be him, not you. You might think, well, they're doing fine. God might not think that at all. You gotta provide Jesus to them. Now, don't miss what I didn't say you had to provide. You don't have to take them to Disney World. You don't have to give them a smartphone. You don't have to buy them a car when they turn 16. You can be a perfectly good parent and not do any of those three things. You can be a great parent and not do any of those three things. They don't need those things. None of those things make them a better person. Stuff doesn't make people into better people. Do you understand that? If you're a jerk and get a lot of stuff, you're just a jerk with more stuff. If you're a loser with no stuff and you get stuff, you're just a loser with stuff. Stuff has nothing to do with their character. Understand that. So don't feel guilty. Well, we can't afford a car. That's fine. Let them get a job. We'll talk about that in a minute. So none of those three things will make them a better person. Stuff doesn't. Model, instruct, provide. Number four, protect. Protect. Physically protect them from dangerous risks. Protect them from dangerous risks. Dangerous risks include people, places, and things. Don't put your 16-year-old on a crotch rocket. It's almost a death sentence. So you got to think about those things. Number two is relationally. Relationally, you have to protect them from bad people. Those bad people include strangers and some of their potential friends. When you have children, you immediately have to begin in your home the FBI, the Family Bureau of Investigation. And you're watching your child, and you're watching what they're doing, and you're watching who they're doing it with. And it never stops till they leave your house. You're always watching for those things. Why? Because it's your job to protect them. Some of you have to protect your children from your brothers or sisters. Some of you from your parents. Some of you from a grandparent. I can't tell you how many times I've heard it, but it's been multiple times. A mother who was molested by her father, who later allows her father to molest her child because she's thinking it'll help her to have a daddy. And she doesn't want to break the family up. Now, did you hear what I just said? A mother giving her child to the child's grandfather, her dad, to molest her when she herself had been molested by this man. That's a family that needs to be broke up. That man should have no access to her or her kids. Period. You got to protect your children. I'm of the opinion that any person who allows another person to abuse someone is as bad as the person, is as bad of a person as is the abuser. If I allow my wife to abuse my children, I would be as bad a person as she is. A great example of this, when this episode in, was it Cincinnati, where these two people got beat almost to death that night. And so there was all kinds of people around. Some reports say some were trying to stop them. Anyway, most people, what they do, they just run their video camera. They don't even call the police. They just want something they can post on YouTube or Facebook. Every one of those people was a coward. And they ought to be completely ashamed themselves that they didn't jump in. Even if they got the crap beat out of them, they should have jumped in there and tried to save those people. Did I just say a bad word in church? You got to protect your children. You got to protect them mentally. You got to protect them from harmful inputs. In computer jargon, garbage in, garbage out. We have a generation of snowflakes who were given everything and protected from nothing. I'll say it again. They were given everything and protected from nothing. I read a book. I should have looked it up. It's a great book. And here's the whole gist of this parenting book. Here's the two mistakes parenting have made. They overprotect physically. Now, how many of you, when you were a kid, used to get on your bicycle and ride till supper time? You can go anywhere you want to do. Now, is the world today a little more dangerous than it was then? Yes. Does that mean anybody gets on a bicycle is going to get kidnapped? No. But a lot of kids don't go anywhere. They can't even be in their backyard if mama's not watching them through the window. They overprotect them physically. And then they don't protect them at all electronically. They get free reign of the internet. Listen to any music they want. Watch any show they want. Go anywhere they want to on the internet. See anything they want to see. Talk to anybody they want to talk to. Parents completely asleep at the wheel. And he says, that's what's wrong with parenting. We ought to be protecting less physically and way, way more electronically. But we don't do it. Now, I won't say that because it ought to be said, and I feel better about saying it. I don't know that anybody's going to do anything about it. But anyway, there you go. If the bottom line is you want your kids to like you, you're no longer a parent. You're an insecure person needing the approval of somebody who ought to need yours. And there's way too many parents like that in our day. You ought to know the lyrics of the songs your kids are listening to. Some of you would be shocked. The lyrics now are unbelievable, especially if it has anything to do with hip-hop. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Some of it, one song was sung on a national awards program that people would have gone to jail for years ago. Just blatant, explicit, unbelievable. Now, a parent's job today is way harder than it was when I was raising kids. Way harder. But just because it's hard doesn't mean you can't do it and you shouldn't try. Hard should never stop you from doing anything. If it's worthwhile and it matters, hard is irrelevant. It just makes it more difficult. But you're going to do it. Once it's too late, parents often ask, well, where do we go wrong? Sometimes the answer is everywhere. 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 Today, you shouldn't let your kids watch TV unless you're watching it with them and know what it is. When how many of you grew up with Bugs Bunny and Roadrunner? Johnny Quest. In fact, when you became adult, the two things you were worried about the most was anvils falling from the sky and getting in quicksand. Right? Those people don't write the cartoons today. They're progressives who are indoctrinating your kids. And frankly, turning them against you. That's what this guy talks about in this book, how the internet and all the social media stuff and advertising is designed to turn your kids against you. And they do a real good job at it. I can't possibly overemphasize the need for you to take control of your child's electronics. And if you don't, my opinion, you're feeding them to the devil. Good luck. You're going to need it. Good luck. You're going to need it. And when they get way off the rails, you're going to have guilt, not just grief. You can't avoid grief. Your kids, no matter what you do, can make bad decisions, do bad things. You can have grief. But you can avoid guilt. One of the things Betsy and I made sure of is if our kids ever started doing things that were wrong, they didn't learn it from us. That was pretty much our bottom line. We would never do anything that if they did it, it would hurt them and put them in jeopardy. All right. You need to be like what you say, white on rice on that. Got to protect them mentally. Number four, you got to protect them emotionally. Kids and teens today think they're far more mature than they are. Just like we did. Just like we did. They're not unusual. They're just like we were. Listen closely. They think they can handle things they can't handle. And it's your job to discern what those things are and cut them off before they get into them. Or they'll get into something over their head and all of a sudden they're in trouble. They're in real trouble. You got to listen. You have to protect yourself from yourself. All of us have tendencies. All of us have vulnerabilities. All of us are capable of incredible sin. King David was a better person, I'm sure, than anybody in this room. And he did worse than I hope everybody in this room, nobody in this room, I hope, has done as bad as he did. Adultery, cover-up, murder. He was a really good man. But see, in every one of us, the worst in the best of us, the worst is still in us. And the worst in us is far worse than we think it is. And so all we got to do is not have a boundary, give the devil an opportunity, not avoid the appearance of evil. Next thing you know, we're in the weeds. We're in real trouble. So you've got to learn to protect yourself from yourself. I've told you, when Joseph fled Potiphar's wife, I don't think it was because of what she wanted to do. I think it's because what he knew he wanted to do. So he got out of there. He protected himself from his vulnerable self. In the same way, you have to protect them from themselves. Because they won't know how to do that. They think they do, but they won't. Now, once they're 18 or out your door, you no longer can. So train them well before you lose them. Number five, spiritually protect them from false teaching. Don't make the mistake of thinking all churches are the same and teach the same things. They are not. They're radically not. Typically, the most popular preachers have the Christian behavior bar a lot lower than we set it here. A lot lower. And many preachers are bending over backwards to keep from offending people with the truth these days. The goal is not to preach the truth. The goal is to get and keep the crowd. The goal is to be popular and liked, not be possibly hated because you're telling the truth, which, by the way, would put you in the category of people like all the prophets, all the apostles, and Jesus. All hated because they told the truth. A pastor's job is to tell people the truth, not protect them from it. And a whole lot of pastors, that's exactly what they're doing. They're protecting their people from the truth. Because we don't want to hurt your feelings. We don't want you to go away. You'll take a checkbook with you. And my numbers will go down and I won't look so good. Wow. We'll talk about that Wednesday night some. If you want to come watch a preacher catch on fire and burn, come Wednesday night. Number five. Fifth word is respect. You got to teach them how to, number one, teach them how to treat people. Respect. Teach them how to treat people. Matthew 7:12, treat people the same way you want them to treat you. Number two, teach them how to take care of things. How to take care of things. Proverbs 27:23-24 tells us, know well the condition of your flocks and pay attention to your herds. For riches are not forever, nor does a crown endure to all generations. What that means is you learn to respect things and take care of things. What we've seen out of young adults over the past several years is a total disrespect for people and things. So if you feel like doing it, shoot a CEO. We'll make a hero out of you. Shoot a Jew. We'll admire you for it. Set a building on fire. You'll be our hero. Topple a statue that's been there for 100 years or whatever else. And in their mind, their snowflake minds, every one of those things is justified, and they're frankly good people, not bad people, for doing them. Teach them how to respect people and things. Number three, because the Bible talks about it, I'm going to throw it in. Teach them how to treat animals. Teach them how to treat animals. Proverbs 12:10, a righteous man has regard for the life of his animal. Well, if he has regard for the life of his animal, how much so, more so, of the life of his of a child or a person? This blew my mind this week. One of the real problems, how many of you are old enough to remember when you had Eastern State Mental Hospital over off of Linesview Pike? Where mentally ill people would go there, and that's where they'd go live the rest of their lives out. It was a wonderful thing. But, you know, in America, we've got to mainstream everybody. So what we did is we closed down the hospital, just moved them to the streets. So now we've got this massive homeless situation of all that. Here's another problem. If you've got a mentally ill child that's dangerous, you can't do anything with him. So Trump's trying to do something about this and get these places opened back up. And anyway, I don't remember if I saw this on Fox News or where I read this, but it's a true story. Lady writes in, She said that she is terrified of her psychopath son. He has at least once poisoned everybody in her family. He literally strangled the pet dog to death. Now, this is a kid with problems, right? She lives every day of her life fearing that he's going to kill her or one of his siblings. And there's not a thing she can do about it until he breaks the law and gets incarcerated. Then maybe he can go somewhere. So it may take the death of his mother or of his sister for him to ever get put away where he can't hurt somebody. Teach him how to treat animals. Number four, teach him to respect authority. What do you do with a child who rebels and disrespects authority? You know, people say, you know, I hear parents say this. I just go, oh gosh. I'm afraid. If I do that, I'm afraid of what my child should do. Listen, you should not be afraid of what your child should do. They should be afraid of what you would do. If you're afraid of them, then they're in charge. Just like in our school systems. Who's in charge in the school system? Come on, teachers, tell me. The students. Because the teachers are afraid of the parents, and afraid of, you know, and everybody's afraid of the parents and school board and everybody else. And so the kids rule. There's some horrific stories I know in Halls High School. I'm sure there's some in these other schools where kids who did awful things should have gone to jail, not come out for years and years and years. Within the week, we're back in their school. You got to teach people how to respect authority. So here's Deuteronomy chapter 21, 18 to 21. So listen. If any man, this is how you fix the respect issue. This is biblical. If it's biblical, it's not just true, it's right. Now, we're not going to do it because we'd rather be victims of evil people than fix evil. If any man has a stubborn and rebellious son who will not obey his father or his mother, and when they chastise him, he will not even listen to them, then his father and mother shall seize him, bring him out to the elders of his city at the gateway of his hometown. How many of you know where this is going? Raise your hand if you know where this is going. Okay, a few of you. They shall say to the elders of this city, this son of ours is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey us. He's a glutton and a drunkard. Then all the men of the city shall stone him to death. So you shall remove the evil from your midst, and all Israel will hear of it in fear. Listen again to those last two phrases. You shall remove the evil from your midst, and all Israel will hear of it and fear. Word would get around, and people would straighten up. So when a kid messes up and he's, you know, does something violent and he's back in school in a couple of days with the same teacher he hit having to teach him, are you kidding me? What do the other kids in school learn? There's no consequences. Do what you want to do, and you can have whatever you want to have. In our day, we call it gentle parenting. So here's what we'll do. We'll wait for them to shoot up a school, then we'll blame society for what they did, and then we'll treat them like somehow they're the victim. Poor little child, he must have been depressed or whatever else. And he becomes the victim rather than the 15 people he shot dead. Am I in the right country? Listen closely. If your kids don't respect your authority, they won't respect anybody. Grant and I both encountered little kids this big down here on the park who were no more afraid of us than they would have been of a helpless baby. Nobody ever taught me respect. We would like to have, but we'd gone to jail. That's another story. If you don't teach them to respect authority, here's what you can look for. their life's going to be a mess, a painful mess, and yours is going to be full of grief. That's possible. You can teach them respect and still end up with that. But if you don't, it's pretty well guaranteed you're going to. Model, instruct, provide, protect, teach, respect. Number six, train. Train them. Educate them. I've got several things. Number one, teach them to pay now so they can play later. Teach them to pay now so they can play later. In your outline, I put distance almost always exists between investment and return. Work hard now and you'll benefit later. Play around now and you pay for it later. And the later you pay, the more it'll cost. So two kids graduate from high school. One says, I want to be a surgeon. Oh gosh, that's a whole lot of school and a whole lot of money and a whole lot of years before you're really making any money. All true. Some other guy says, well, I ain't going to go to school. I got to get me a pickup truck. I'm going to get me a job. I ain't never going to read another book. Fast forward 20 years. Who's winning? The surgeon making $700,000 a year? Or the guy driving the $80,000 pickup truck, cost more than his house did, and no skills and no real future. You pay on the front end and you get to play on the back end. But if you play around the front end, you pay on the back end. And the longer you wait to try to catch up, the more it'll cost you to catch up. Number two, teach them that choices have consequences. Teach them that choices have consequences. Galatians 6:7 says we reap what we sow. All choices have consequences. You get to choose your choices, but once you choose your choice, you don't get to choose the consequence of that choice. It's been true since Adam and Eve that choices, bad choices, lead to bad consequences. And also, we have no idea what those bad consequences might be. They may be far worse than we imagine. Number three, teach them to be faithful. Teach them to be faithful. Proverbs 20, verse 6 says, many a man proclaims his own loyalty, but who can find a trustworthy man? Teach him to be dependable and faithful. Someone who others can count on. Listen, you young people. When I was growing up, to get ahead, you had to excel. Because people were trying to make something of themselves. You guys, you can be average and you'll be ahead of the pack. If you'll excel, you'll be way ahead of the pack. Don't settle. Don't be like your friends who are messing around and not really digging in, not paying the price now so one day they can reap the benefit of doing that. Teach them to be dependable, faithful. Number four, teach them to keep their word. Teach them to keep their word. Psalm 15, verse 4. Talk about a man who gets into the presence of the Lord. It says, he swears to his own herd and does not change. In other words, he says what he'll do and he does it even though he may later regret ever saying he would do it. Say it again. He does what he says even if later he regrets saying he would do it. He swears to his own herd and doesn't change. So here's the rule with your kid. If they say they will, then they must. If they say they will, then they must. So, for example, they sign up for a sport. They won't play soccer, baseball, whatever they sign up for. And it gets into the practices, and they decide, I don't think I want to do this anymore. So what's the solution? You're doing it this year. You don't have to play next year if you want to, but you said, you signed up, you said you'd play this year. You're playing this year. And they're going to say, well, I don't want to. And then you say, it didn't matter what you wanna. You're playing. Teach them how to keep their word. How many people do you know that if they say it, you can count on it? It would never enter the mind of my wife or daughters, and hopefully my son-in-laws and grandchildren, that anything I tell them is not the truth, at least as I know it. And that they can't count on me doing anything I said I'd do. It would never enter their mind. Because that's just the way it's been. That's the way everybody ought to be. Yet how many of you people know somebody who says that, you know, if there's a Sunday school party, they'll bring the chicken and they don't show up with the chicken? That's an old story, love, you know. I'm still in therapy over that, but anyway. We did have beans. It was an outdoor event. That was the one good thing. Teach them to keep their word. A person who's faithful, dependable, always does what he says, will be so far ahead of most other people. So far ahead. They'll be so much more successful. Because I don't know about you, but as soon as somebody tell me they'll do something and they don't do it, I stick them in a category of people you can't really count on. All of us know people who will say in the moment what they need to say for you to like them, right? Does anybody not know somebody like that? They'll say whatever is of least resistance to get you to like them in the moment, and then later they won't do what they said they'd do. If you marry that person, God bless you. You'll need it. You teach them to keep their word. Number five, you teach them how to work. Teach them how to work. Don't hand them money, have them earn it. So we give them allowance. What do they do to earn the allowance? They need to earn it. I was working by the age of 10 to have spending money. We were poor. I wouldn't have any if I hadn't have done it. When Betsy was 14, one day, school was out. Her dad said, get in the car. Where are we going? You've got a job. And so she learned the day she started her job that she had one. And he took her to her job. And there she started. Her younger brother, Jeff, he worked in grocery stores, I guess, as a kid, and then up through high school, and I don't know, in college. So he had Melody. Jeff said, but before we can get married, I've got to have $20,000 in the bank, and you've got to have 10. And they didn't get married until they had it. And they didn't have to wait a long time. You know why? Because they'd been working, not playing around. They had jobs. Try to get them a job at Chick-fil-A. It's the best place they could work. They'll learn manners. They'll learn social skills. They'll learn work skills. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. How could I serve you today? It's been my pleasure. How far you think that'll take them when they leave Chick-fil-A? It'll take them a long way, I'm guaranteeing you. Having real people skills will take you further than education does. It's your job to prepare them for the real world, not to be the reason they're not prepared for it. It's your job to prepare them for the real world, where they don't always get what they want, where they're not the center of attention, where they get told what to do, and they do it or they get fired, where they know they have to work in order to get a check, get money. That's the real world. And your job is to prepare them for it, not to try to keep them from it, which too many do. Ecclesiastes 9:10 tells us, whatever your hand finds, do it with all your might. Proverbs 21:25 says that the desire of the sluggard, the lazy person, puts him to death, for his hands refuse to work. Teach them how to work. From the age of 10, I could make money because I would wash cars, they'd be spotless. I could mow yards, they'd look great, they'd look perfect. That's a good skill. People notice that. And they'll want you to do work for them. We've hired some kids that come over to the house. A lot of times I'm doing something, I'll need another hand, and so I'll hire one of our teenagers, they come over, and I'm looking for that. Some of them come over, they're fabulous. Work hard, good attitude. So teach them how to work. Number six, teach them how to manage disappointment. How to manage disappointment. Life is full of disappointments. It's full of disappointments. Now, you can't prepare them for that if they're never disappointed as a child. If every time they're unhappy, you make them happy. Every time they want something, don't get it, and pout, you go get it for them. So they never learn how to be disappointed. Adults, do you ever get disappointed? Raise your hand. Oh, yeah. A lot. Life's full of it. They need to know how to deal with that. They don't just wake up one day, okay, I'm 22, I can handle this now. No, they got to learn. They got to learn to be happy and keep going when people let them down and life is very unlike what they wished it was. They need to learn that failure doesn't have to be final and that setbacks are not fatal. They're a part of life. Whatever you do, there's going to be setbacks, but you don't quit and give up. You keep going. You might have to recalibrate, refigure how you're going to do this, but you go back at it. You don't just sit down and pout and quit. They need to know that life is often unfair, that nobody's perfect, including them. They need to learn how to forgive themselves. They need to learn how to forgive others. They need to learn how not to quit. Not to quit. They need to learn, as Jan Silva says, that this is one event in a lifetime of events. So something terrible happens. This is one event in a lifetime of events. Over the rest of your life, there will be plenty more terrible things happen. And there'll be one event in a lifetime of events. Or it could be one hard season. I've had those in a lifetime of seasons. So they got to learn that. They need to learn how not to throw people away who have a different opinion or might just let them down one time. Say that again. They got to learn not to throw people away who have a different opinion. Because somebody may have a different opinion on this thing, but they agree with you on 50 others. Don't throw them away for the disagreement. And somebody might disappoint you sometime. They may just, you know, whatever reason, they just did. Don't throw them away. They may come through for you the next 40. But see, some people, that's just the way they are. Well, you don't do what I want you to do. I'm done with you. You're not going to have a lot of friends that way. The only perfect person I know is my wife, and that's because I'm married to her. So anyway, you understand. They got to learn that. These are all emotional skills that they have to know to be successful and happy. Model, instruct, provide, protect, teach to respect, train, finally, discipline. Number 7, discipline. Teach them to obey. They've got to learn to obey. If they don't learn to obey, they're not going to keep a job. If they don't learn to obey, they're not going to stay married. Now somebody's thinking, but I'm the husband. Oh, you'll do a whole lot of obeying or you won't be married. You're afraid to laugh on that one, aren't you guys? So here's how this works. You tell them what to do. You tell them what's going to happen if they don't do it. And you do what you said you'd do if they don't do what you told them to do. You tell them what to do. You tell them what's going to happen if they don't do it. And then you do what you said you'd do if they don't do what you told them to do. It's real simple. And then they learn that. They learn how to do what they're told. Learn how to obey. How many of you have seen this with these parents? Okay, I'm going to count to one. I'm going to count to three. One. Two. I really mean it. Three. And the kid's just looking at him. Inside, they've got their fist curled up and say, I'm not afraid of you. Y'all say this, I'm going to count to two. And it's going to be a quick count. One, two. Trouble has arrived. Trouble has arrived. This is how life works. You do what you're told to do or you get fired. You get ditched. You get broken up with. You get divorced. To believe in Jesus is to believe that He's right about everything. God's a perfect Father, so whatever He does or tells us to do in His Word is the right thing to do. Hebrews 12, 6 to 11 tells us about how God parents. It says there that He disciplines, corrects those whom He loves. And He says if we sin and He doesn't correct us, it's just proof we're not His children. One quick way to know that you're not a Christian, sin and see if you keep getting away with it. If you do, you're not His. Because He disciplines those that He loves. Why? Because it's the right thing to do. Verses 10 and 11 says, He disciplines us for our good so that we may share His holiness. All discipline for the moment seems not to be joyful but sorrowful. Yet to those who have been trained by it, afterwards it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness. Disciplining your child is no fun. It's not fun for them, and it's not fun for you. But the outcome is worth the trouble. God is determined to teach, train, and discipline us so that we become like Him, live the life we should live. Discipline is no fun for the child or the parent, but it's necessary for both. If you don't discipline them, they're not going to learn how to behave, and you kind of resign from parenting. This Thursday's New Sentinel, there's a lady that you call in. It used to be Dear Abby, now it's Ask Carolyn. Now, Carolyn is a flaming progressive. So today she gets a letter in, this is morning's paper, she gets a letter in, it says, we've got a child, we've been teaching, she's a teenager, we've been teaching her all about sex, so she would make the right decision at the right time. We told her if she ever needs birth control, we'll get it for her. And if something goes awry, we will do plan B, which is an abortion. And so Carolyn thought she's a pretty good parent. So realize we're dealing with an idiot, okay? But now you're going to subscribe to the paper just so you can read her. This was Thursday's paper, Ask Carolyn. A mother wrote in asking what she should do with her out-of-control five-year-old. Carolyn gave her some silly advice that would help turn the child into a problem for everybody in that child's present and future. So here's the deal. He's breaking things, then take everything that'll break out of the house. Gentle parenting. How many good school teachers have quit because of out-of-control kids that parents and schools do nothing about? I'm telling you, too many. And you teachers, I feel sorry for you. You have responsibility, but you have no authority. And the kids can come in and run over everybody because everybody's afraid of a lawsuit. The best answer to this woman's question was, light up the five-year-old's rear end. Set it on proverbial fire. And eventually, if not immediately, that five-year-old will figure out, when I do what daddy says not do, my bottom hurts a lot. I think I'm going to stop doing that. That wasn't her advice. Jot down Proverbs 22:15. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. The rod of discipline will remove it far from him. Again, since this is in the Bible, it's not just true, it's right. This lady who wrote in is raising a monster. And if she keeps listening to people like Carolyn, he'll probably shoot up school someday. Now here, somebody's thinking this. I raised my child like that and he rebelled when he became a teenager or a young adult. Don't raise your hand because I don't want to know who you are. But somebody's thinking that. Because my child has done bad, I must have done something wrong. Not necessarily so. You do the right thing, not because of what you get from it, but because of who you become by it. The right thing to do is the right thing to do, no matter what the outcome is. Some are mistakenly under the impression that not correcting bad behavior in a child is the way to get good behavior. That not correcting bad behavior in a child is the way to get good behavior. Does this make sense to anybody in this room when you put it like that? No. That happens all the time. I'm afraid they won't like me. Then you never should have become a parent. Used to, we lived over on McNeely. I would come home from work. And as soon as I came in the door, bet you'd go walk for 3 or 4 miles. I don't have a horse you walk. As soon as she got back in the door, I would go run. She would cook supper. Then I'd come back. And, so I'd come home to her every day. She'd been home with a girl who, by the way, were angels when they went to other people's houses. Okay. But, I'd come home, she'd meet me at the door, cried, all I do is beat them all day long. They're going to hate me. Ask them. They adore. In that Hebrews thing, it says, our fathers disciplined us and we respected them. In fact, with men, it's kind of a bragging right. Man said, well, my dad used to take his hand and wear me out. Well, that ain't nothing. My dad used to pull his belt off and whip my tail. Somebody else went, well, that ain't nothing. My dad used to get a machine gun and shoot at me. We didn't hate our dads for correcting us. We're kind of proud of it. We kind of made sport of it. Unless you were abusive, your child's rebellion has nothing to do with what you did. Get rid of the false guilt. That's the enemy wanting you to feel bad. You have no control over what they eventually choose to do. I know that's a horrible thing to face. It's just the truth. And all kinds of people in this room have broken hearts over kids who've made decisions and choices and live in ways that they were never raised to live. And it's not your fault. Again, unless you abused them. With your children, there will be a war of wills. And it's a battle to the end. It's not going to go away at 16 or 17 or even 7. It's a war of wills. So I put in your outline something that's true of you if you're a good person, a parent. If you win, everyone wins. If you lose, everyone loses. If you win, everybody wins. That war of the wills. If you lose it, everybody loses. So, for example, if you train your child to act as he or she should, they win. Their lives are going to be good because they know how to behave. You win because they're going to bring you mostly joy instead of pain. Society wins because they become good people. Their school teachers loved having them in class. This guy loves having them as an employee. They turned out well. And then God wins because hopefully they'll become the person he made them to be. But if they go off the rails, everybody loses. They lose because their life's going to be full of trouble and pain. You lose because your life's going to be full of grief if your child goes off the rails and lives that way. Society loses because now you got somebody out there who doesn't behave as he ought to behave. And God loses because they never become the person he made them to be. You've got to win the war of the wills. That's what I said earlier. You're not to be afraid of them, what they might do. They need to be afraid of you and what you might do. So when you start this, at least at two. If you think you're going to start at 8 or 9, you're in trouble. Now, I want to close with two phenomenal pieces of advice. Well, thank you, Rocky. Well, I thought they were. Well, good. Okay. Here's the first one. The first one's not original. You don't have kids because you want them. You have kids because you have what they need to give to them. You don't have kids because you want them. I want a baby. Get a puppy. You just want something to play with. Get a puppy. If you have a child, you've just signed up for the hardest job you'll ever have. Understand that. You don't have a child because you want a baby. You have a child because you're in a position to give that child everything that child should need. That is some great, great advice. Again, not original to me. Can you give them spiritually what they need? Can you give them emotionally what they need? Can you give them relationally what they need? Can you give them financially what they need and deserve? Can you take care of them? If not, wait until you can. One of the things they will want and deserve is growing up in a loving home with their biological father and mother. Don't you think kids deserve that? So here's the next one. Don't get married. Y'all taking notes? Girls, especially, you take these notes. Don't get married and start popping out babies. Chances are, sadly, your marriage may not last. There's a real good chance of that. You say, but we're Christian. People in churches divorce the same way as people outside church. You wait until you know this guy or this girl's a keeper. We're going to make it. Now, that's the kind of home a child ought to be born into. I've known situations where the husband is abusing the wife and they're popping out babies. And five babies later, she leaves him. Well, why'd you have five babies with a man who was abusing you? Why did you bring them into that world? You don't bring them into your world until your world's the kind of place they ought to be. And so you see, is this marriage really going to be a keeper? I say that to put guilt on anybody, but if you ought to be the first people to know, yeah, that's exactly right. I've only cried twice reading a book in my life. One was years ago. I read this big book on divorce. It's basically a gigantic study. And I guess my daughter was probably going through her divorce about that time. And it said that children of divorce don't have two homes. They have none. They carry a backpack from one to the other. And I cried. Most recent one, I was reading Shattered Dreams again by Larry Crabb. And he was talking about when Jesus was in Gethsemane. And remember, he was grieved to the point of death. And the Bible doesn't say this, but you know, he kind of threw this in and it makes sense. He said, the Father looked down on the Son and he turned to an angel and said, go to him, my son is crying. Go to him, my son is crying. And I just cried, thinking about Jesus and what he went through for us. Wow. Don't bring kids into a bad marriage. You got to think about them. When you have children, your life becomes about them. At that point, it's not really about you and your mate being happy as much as it's about them getting what they want, need, and deserve.
Parenting is one of the greatest callings God gives and one of the greatest challenges. In a world full of confusion about how to raise children, God's Word provides timeless wisdom for how to love, lead, and disciple our kids. Well, we hope you enjoyed today's message. And if you did, why don't you join us for a service this Sunday? We get started at 10:15 on Sunday mornings, but if you can't join us in person, head over to CorrietonChurch.com to watch Corrieton Live this Sunday or Wednesday. The hosts on Corrieton Live would love to speak with you in the chat, so tune in this week.